President, reconvening the special meeting of the Port of Tacoma Commission. June 11th, 2018. The time is approximately 5:05. We previously called the meeting to order at 3:30 PM and adjourned into executive session where we discussed three litigation, potential litigation items pursuant to RCW 4230. No votes or final actions were taken. And for the record, Commissioner McCarthy is excused because he's traveling. He will be attempting to join us by telephone at approximately, I think, 5:30. I don't know how well it's gonna work out for his travel schedule, but anyway, that's the, that's for the record. So what we now have is the flag salute. Would you please join me in the flag salute? I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. The first order of business we have is the consent agenda, and it's consists of the minutes of May 14th, 2018, and May 17th, 2018, and the check wire certification. And just for the record, to make certain, in the May 14th meeting minutes, there is a additional, I can't remember on which page it was, additional item that needed to be inserted, the word "to" to make the sentence complete on the May 14th minutes. Is that right?
That's correct.
Yes. So just so you're aware of that item that's before us today, consent agenda.
I'd like to move that we accept the consent agenda with the correction as suggested.
It's been moved and seconded. Any further conversation by the commission? If not, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much. We're now on the agenda for public comment. And we have a list here for those of you that have signed up. If you would like to sign up after you hear the testimony, please feel free. I think there's another sign-up sheet out there. The other thing is that typically we try to limit comments to 3 minutes. So that's out of respect for the individuals following you. So if that's possible, we would sure like to encourage you to follow the 3-minute rule. First up we have is Dax, ILW22.
Howdy, commissioners. And we might need a bigger room here pretty quick. So I'd like to talk to you about some stuff that's real near and dear to my heart.
Dax, could you identify yourself?
Dax Coe, Local 22.
Thank you.
So for 10 years, Local 22 has been trying to have a relationship with the Port of Tacoma. We have $650,000 worth of receipts to two law firms that are using hired guns to fight us. That doesn't work with relationships. You know, it's really unfortunate. At the heart of our union values is equal work for equal pay. Port management feels otherwise. We have proof of that as well. The reported 2017 base salary for commissioners is all the same. Equal title, equal work, equal pay. Sounds like you guys should be union. When it comes to negotiating, I'm not really sure who I'm negotiating with or against. At the table, the port has a newer gentleman who is supposedly the chief negotiator for the port. But I also hear he needs to come back to Don, or he needs to go to John, or he needs to go to the commission. I don't know who I'm supposed to be working with or against. If it is the commission, I'm more than happy, and my brothers and sisters are more than happy, to sit right here in a public forum and do it. We just want to have some results, and we want to know who we're supposed to negotiate with. Our membership has tasked me to negotiate a fair contract with equal work for equal pay. As the leader of Local 22, I'm going to use every resource I can to do so. And I'm forced to use every resource now. I asked to begin bargaining a contract in January of 2017 at nearly every labor relations committee meeting we had. I've actually spoke to a handful of you last year and said, we have every intent of starting early to be done either on time or early. We were told no, 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 no. And then in January of 2018, let's go to the table. We show up, port's not prepared, not even close. That's a waste of our resources. It's a waste of our time. I guess I'll take a lot of responsibility for that. Shame on me for not sending a formal letter to demand to bargain to the Port of Tacoma, PERC, and the newspaper. We wouldn't be sitting here so late. I'm not going to make that mistake again, I guarantee. So, as a president of 22 and a taxpayer in Pierce County, I'm asking the commission to start looking inside their house, get things right before we start focusing on the Northwest Seaport Alliance. If you hate me for doing my job, standing up here, bringing a few things to light, so be it. That's what I'm supposed to do. That's what leaders do. Human rights are union rights. Union rights are human rights. Thank you.
Thank you, Dax. The next person is Tyler Brady, Local 22.
Good evening, commissioners. My name is Tyler Brady. I'm from Milton, Washington. I'm a proud rank and file member of the International Longshore and Warehouse Union. I'm here today to call on you to take the steps necessary to ensure a fair contract for ILW Local 22, Local 22 Port Security, and Local 22 TSO. As you know, the Port of Tacoma has enjoyed great success as of late. We've seen new cranes, new customers, and the property values in Pierce County have added to the tax levy. At the same time, executives have been rewarded with hefty raises and bonuses. Excessive managers have been hired, and hundreds of thousands of taxpayer dollars have been wasted on labor attorneys. But I believe there's a better way. You may be familiar with the Tacoma Advantage. The Tacoma Advantage put this place on the map. The idea of the Tacoma Advantage lives on in the North Intermodal Yard, an idea pioneered by Tacoma longshoreman Ike Morrow. The Tacoma Advantage was the idea that the union and the port could work together to get cargo in and out faster and safer than anywhere else. With the current sentiment of the port management, the Tacoma Advantage is no more. I call on you to bring back the Tacoma Advantage, to reinstate it today, because what's good for the union is also good for the port. Thank you.
Brad Link, ILWU 22. Brad, do I have that right? No, Brad. Victor Leroy Mills, Local 20. Excuse me, pass. Okay. Mr. Jim Norton, Local 23, retired.
Been a long time since I've been up here. And I was just thinking on my way down here, what in the hell am I doing here again? But here I am. And the reason I'm here probably is because of the union, which I'm a proud member, and the port. And when I came around, we wouldn't have had an issue like this because we didn't have any work. And things started to change in the 60s and we became a bigger port. Things became more complex. Negotiations become more complex, and I've negotiated quite a few of these contracts, and every one I've sat back and taken a look at it, and they've become more complex. Our workers have become more skilled, our ladies, our clericals have to be more skilled, and it requires more intense bargaining. And what I see happening here now is not so much the difficulty in the two sides getting together. It's a lack of communications. And I think with a little work, I think this whole thing can be put together. You know, it takes two sides to get a contract and negotiate. You got to go from A to B. And a lot of times it's difficult to get there. But we can get there if you try. I mean, it takes a lot of work and it has to be done. I remember the first contract I negotiated was with a blonde-haired guy. I think he's from North Dakota. This guy was tough. We were in there for about 8 months, and it was my first contract. And I thought, if they're all going to be like this, the guy sitting right over there now is Don Meyer.
I got a haircut.
And I learned a lot from Don, and that was my first, that was in the 1980s, I think, my first contract. But from then on, we always got a contract, and we always realized that there were things the port needed, and there's things that we needed, and there had to be a common point in between where we arrived at, and we did. We were never afraid to sit down and talk to the port. I would talk to the port director if I had to, and this is the way you work things out. If you can't talk to each other, you aren't going to negotiate, and I see some of that here now, and I think the first thing that has to be done is you have to sit down with each other and work some fundamentals out how you're going to negotiate, and from then on, you can negotiate. And from what I know, I haven't really delved into it yet. I think there's a contract there that'll benefit both sides. I hope so. And if there's something I can do to help, I'll sure do it. But I think there's a contract there, and it's going to take some hard work, but it has to be done. It's better for the port and the union. So thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Rick Semple, Historic Tacoma. Rick?
This is not about the union, but this is about the fire station.
Identify yourself.
Rick Semple. I'm a Tacoma resident, and I'm on the board of Historic Tacoma. We have learned that the fire department and is proposing to demolish an older station that is at the 11th Street, on the east side of the 11th Street access. It's on the west side of the bridge that's been up in the air for many, many years. But that station is on the National Register of Historic Places. It's on the State Register of Historic Places, and it's on the Tacoma Register of Historic Places. At one time, the fire department had thought to renovate that station, but they had a structural analysis done and found that it would be difficult and more expensive to make it come up to current fire department standards. And so they're proposing to demolish that station. Our position, we're somewhat aghast, the board is somewhat aghast that after something is placed on the register, not only the National Register, the State Register, but the local register, an agency of the city would propose to demolish this structure, as opposed to looking elsewhere. If I understand they need a new station, and one that works, but I think that the best thing would be to look elsewhere to locate that station, either next to the building or in an entirely new location that could better serve the whole port. The location now where it is right next to the LNG plant and at the very tip of the peninsula or the tide flats. If it were located, we all know there's quite a bit of land available on the tide flats. The station wouldn't need that much land. It could acquire it from the port. So anyway, that's our position. I've got a couple of letters from board members that are a little more precise and to the point, perhaps. But I wish that we could engage with you, and we're engaging with the city as well, to find a solution to this that doesn't involve tearing this older 1924 structure down. So thank you. And where would I put these?
Yeah, just give it to Julia. Thank you. The next person is Jeff Hancock of ILWU Alaska Longshore Division. Jeff?
A magnetometer or something?
Thank you, Jeff.
Good evening, commissioners. My name is Jeff Hancock, and I'm representing the Alaska Longshore Division of the International Longshore Warehouse Union. I live and work in Dutch Harbor, Alaska, and I have some other brothers of mine that are here from Kodiak, Alaska tonight. And we're here in solidarity for our brothers and sisters of Local 22 here in the Port of Tacoma. Me and my fellow Alaska residents got to visit the port for the first time today and see you know, the development that's happened here and so forth. And it's a vital link in the chain that comes to Alaska via Anchorage, Kodiak, and to Dutch Harbor before returning each week. And the mechanics that work on the equipment, the clerks and staff that work in the offices are all equally important part of that chain. And in our town, and I don't want to take too much time here because I'm just a visitor, but in our town, we also have to maintain important relationships with community boards and commissions, and also with our employers through negotiations. And any time when the attorneys are so deeply involved in the process and things get stalled, it really breaks down that relationship that we so vitally need in order to be a community and progress. So thank you, and happy to be here and have the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Jeff. Is there anyone else that would like to speak that didn't sign up? Yes, sir, go ahead. Please identify yourself.
My name is Jeremy Camel. I'm with Longshore Local 23. I'm a member of the Puget Sound District Council, and I'll say that the Puget Sound District Council is concerned, and we would hope that negotiations would, you know, in good faith would commence, you know, as soon as possible. And, you know, hopefully for the good of both the port and the employees. I'm sure that there's a mutual agreement that can be made.
Thank you. Another, yes, please identify yourself. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Sarah Esch. I'm from Local 19 Seattle with the ILWU. And I'm just here to be with solidarity with my brothers and sisters from Local 22. It sounds like the issue has to be with, one, not knowing who to negotiate with to get their contract underway. It sounds like they've been without a contract for about 3 months. Negotiations have stalled. And then also equal work for equal pay. It sounds like some of their employees are little out of balance. So I'm just here in solidarity with my ILWU brothers and sisters. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Sarah. Okay. Hearing or seeing no one else that wants to provide public comments, the public comment period is closed. I think I would like to just take a couple of minutes here to respond to a few items that have been mentioned. First of all, I do appreciate the fact that when people talk about the Tacoma Advantage, I remember very early on in my career on the waterfront, the relationship that the port had with labor was very special in my mind. And I will say that I still come from that viewpoint, number one. Number two, I would have to say that when people ask about our process, it's kind of a cumbersome process, but the way that we have to manage this is that we count on our CEO to basically provide a recommendation to us. That's just the way this process works. So we look to our CEO to follow up, to do the job that's required to get to a successful negotiating process that's fair, that has communication as a key component of it. And we expect that. And I'm sure that our CEO has heard your comments and will be taking those issues under consideration. But the reality is we have to count on the CEO to make a recommendation to us ultimately. And then we take that recommendation, either accept it, reject it, or do something else at this stage of the game. So that's the role we play as part-time commissioners, and that's the role that we expect the CEO to play. The other part is that I do appreciate Mr. Norton's involvement. My knowledge of the role that he's played in the past, and I believe it's still important to play it as we look at the situation today, and that is the ability to have good communication both ways. It has to work both ways. You have to be honest about your conversation at the table, and you have to lay it out where you're going, what you're doing. And I'm confident that our CEO will follow up on that and will do the right job to have a recommendation that I think is fair and one that can work for you all as well as work for the port. And that's kind of where I'm at. And I believe that, I just want to say, though, it's important, you know, that we do hear from you and understand your issues. But it's also important just to recognize the role of our CEO. And I think some of you know that. And I hope that I have to respect that process, because that's how you reach that conclusion. The other thing is that, you know, it was a major decision by this group, actually through the Alliance, to purchase the new cranes. And that was based upon the belief that we got an excellent labor force at Local 22. I'm very proud of that. I believe we all are very proud of that. And that allowed that decision to be, even though it was a very expensive decision, the one that go forward and say, by gosh, we got the best kind of a group that we could ever possibly have working on those cranes. And I'm very proud of that decision that this board, in addition to our Alliance partners, made. So I hope that we can reach a conclusion here, John, as we go forward. I expect you will have a recommendation for us, hopefully in the very near future. I also want to say thank you, Mr. Norton. You've been retired for a long time, my friend. But I know that when Mr. Norton gets involved, I think something will usually happen, John. So I'm looking forward to a favorable conclusion to this process. You are all too valuable to us not to have a favorable conclusion. So I don't know if there are any other comments that anyone would like to make, but that's kind of where I'm at in terms of those. Is that?
I'll just let the process go forward.
Yeah.
Well, with that, our brothers and sisters are going to let you guys do the work that you're here to do.
Thank you.
But Dax, always come back. We have these meetings every month, so please don't.
Well, hey, keep them at five. That way we can get some people here. Hey. Like I said, start the chairs. Perfect.
Thank you. Right. Thank you. Okay, next part of our agenda is we have stakeholder updates. Maybe we'll just wait for a minute here.
Thank you.
Don't total cost this. We're doing a great job. Okay.
I think
so. Yeah,
you got to have leaders on both
yeah,
sides.
Yeah.
So you guys can move up now.
Okay. Next item we have is the stakeholder updates. Tacoma Fire Station. Yvette, you're going to introduce this subject for us.
Yes, I am. Good afternoon, Commissioners. Yvette Mason, Local Government Affairs. And at the May Port Commission meeting, the Commission requested a progress update on Tacoma Fire Station 5, the one located at 3510 East 11th Street. And today we have the Tacoma Fire Department Chief, and we also have Justin Davis from the Public Works Department to give you an update. And just as a reminder, for background information, Puget Sound Energy committed $5.5 million for the mitigation associated with the liquefied natural gas facility, consisting of capital contributions towards refurbishing a fire station or rebuilding a fire station on Taylor from SR 509 to East 11th Street. The City of Tacoma committed projected new tax revenues to reopen a functioning fire station number 5. And so no action is being requested of the commission. This is just an update.
Thank you very much.
So we have Justin Davis and the chief.
Oh, and there you are.
Great, thank you very much. And thank you for the invitation to come down and give you an update on old station 15, which we're now referring to as future station 5. The existing building, constructed in 1928, 3,300 square feet, last used as an active fire station March of 2007. Since then, we've still retained control of the station, using it for training, search and rescue, and also for vehicle storage. Our original intention was to perform a basic renovation of the station, so that it would become operational in accordance with the ILA between the City of Tacoma and the Port of Tacoma, and also the environmental impact statement for Puget Sound Energy. But when we looked a little more closely at the station, and I did bring Justin Davis, the manager for Public Works for Facilities, along with me to answer some of the more detailed questions, if you have them, about the structure, that those renovation costs would trigger a code required, not a fire code requirement, but a building code requirement for a structural analysis. That structural analysis in turn showed that the building was unfit. And I want to really be clear about what unfit means. It's not the condition of the building so much. It is the materials and construction methods of the building that that would now cause it to be, or that is considered unfit. So if we were to build the same building alongside of it, using the same methods and materials, it too would be unfit. So just there had been some concerns that the building condition was what was driving this, but really it is the materials and methods that were used in the construction. And then I too want to say that we are committed to fulfilling the terms of the ILA with the Port of Tacoma, but we're not particularly married to that site. For operational purposes, the fire department will put forward its point of view, as we should for operational reasons. But again, this is a public process, and so we do welcome concerns from the historical community about the building. And we're always, of course, looking for win-win-wins where we're able to provide something much better than if we were just simply working by ourselves. So we'll be talking to the City Council, the CVS committee, on Thursday, and I invite anybody who is interested in that to attend that meeting as well. Because I think there's some broader issues will be discussed as well. So with that, do you have any questions for me?
Well, go ahead, Commissioner Johnson.
I understand structure. I have no clue what unfit means. Does that mean I don't fit, or does that mean, what does it mean?
So it used to be, and I'm going to defer the question to Justin Davis, but it used to be the dangerous building standard, and now it's called unfit in the building code. But Justin, do you want to take that?
Oh, dangerous means it's going to come down?
From a code perspective, it'd mean the building wouldn't be allowed to be occupied as it currently sits.
Because
it's structurally unfit for occupancy. So it doesn't meet the code, even in a reduced state for the year it was constructed, taking into consideration it is historic. If we were to not proceed with the project, the building department would red tag the facility today.
The occupancy of any type or occupancy as a fire station?
Any type.
Would it have to, over time, eventually be torn down?
If the structural deficiencies weren't addressed for occupancy, yes, it would have to be.
Well, even if you didn't for occupancy, if you just wanted to keep it for a historical site, would you have to restructure it or do something of that nature?
I would have to flesh that level of detail out, but I would imagine that as long as you still made an effort to maintain the facility, that it could just remain unoccupied.
But you haven't done any studies on what it would take to actually make it occupiable.
Oh, we definitely have. Yeah, as the chief said, that was the initial goal of the project, was basically just to reactivate that fire station and put it back into service. But as we did some deconstructive testing as well as a thorough structural analysis, that's when it came back that the building was unfit. It was unfit, especially for an essential facility, which is the level that we would build a new modern station to meet. In other words, a facility that would withstand a criteria of natural disaster so that the chief's resources could still respond.
Okay, it's earthquakes we're concerned with.
Well, it's earthquake, it's flood, it's tsunami, it's all but our region, yes, earthquake would definitely be the most prevalent.
If tsunami, the whole thing is going to go anyway, so it's got to be earthquake, can't be flood.
Yes.
It's all on the same level.
Well, with the earthquake is one of our concerns, is a tsunami coming down the stretch of water here that leads to the port. So, but yes, the initial review was to look at it from an essential facility. We realized right away that it wasn't going to meet those requirements. So went back and reevaluated with the code folks, and were able to get some credits for the fact that it is a historic structure. So they gave us some leeway in the code, and actually about the same amount of leeway you'd get if you were to turn it into a different use, and the building still does not meet that criteria.
I'd have to go in and change the structure.
You'd have to reinforce the structure in some way to meet.
So I'd have to add steel and all those kind of things to do that.
Yeah, steel or concrete or other types of materials, especially the large hose tower that protrudes from the top of the structure is very dangerous in the situation that it's in.
Thank you.
What?
Yes, Commissioner Petrich.
When was the building last used, occupied?
By the fire department as an active fire station, March 2007.
No, just occupied.
We've never had anyone living there. We've done training there. So we've had firefighters in the building, and we've had storage in the building as well.
And it continues in that for that use?
We have not used it for search and rescue training since we started this process.
Okay, so last year maybe.
Correct.
Or something. Well, I have to make a comment because I do also serve on the board of the Washington Trust for Historic Preservation. And I know that this is of great interest to the Washington Trust. I think most of us are aware that they were very actively involved in saving the 11th Street Bridge, named that particular structure as an endangered structure. And I suspect this would be considered an endangered structure also if it does have its historic designation right now. So it seems that it would be very interesting. So I guess you're not actually committed to building the new fire station at that particular location. You might be looking at other locations. Is that correct?
That's correct. So what we're committed to doing is meeting the operational needs of the fire department to provide service to the port in accordance with the ILA between the port and the city of Tacoma. But the specific site and that specific building, no, we're not married to
that. But if you separated the building from the site, for example, if the building itself as a historic structure were to be moved and used and have a different purpose, repurposed, that would be another possibility. Is that correct?
That's correct. From the fire department's point of view, that would be correct. Yeah.
So we did hear the concerns about the possibility of moving Station 15 to a different location and talk to our structural engineer, and it's really not feasible. The type of construction that it is it's a big concrete slab with hollow red clay tile walls that are constructed on top of that slab. So unless you built a frame inside or outside of that station to support it and essentially lift the entirety of that station by digging somehow underneath of it, it's really, and it's the way it's constructed, it's not feasible to relocate.
As you're saying, it's blocks and it's gonna just fall apart.
It literally is blocks. And the difference between blocks and Lego blocks is there's nothing connecting these blocks together except for the small amount of mortar that was placed in between them and the skim coat of mortar that's on the inside and outside.
It kind of depends how much money you have and a lot of money. But if, let's say we don't touch it and we build a fire station a block away, whatever, that building is still, nobody can go inside. You still can't occupy it.
That's correct.
You just take a picture of it and drive by, essentially.
As it sits today, it's not occupiable. That's correct.
Is it possible to visit that building?
From my standpoint, sure.
Okay. I'd just like to request the opportunity to be able to see the building.
Yeah, we'd be happy to show you.
And maybe others would like to see it as well.
Okay. Any other questions? I guess I got one comment and then a question. I just want to say, Chief Dugan, that thank you for going on various trips with us to look at other facilities, the last one being the LNG use on the BC ferries. In each case, you participated in it. We were very thankful for that. But the question I have is that considering this historical designation and the complication that poses, one of the questions I still get in the community is that is the timing of the fire station such that it's going to be done, completed, and up been trained and staffed before the facility, the PSE facility, is actually operational. So could you speak a little bit in terms of the timelines that you're kind of anticipating and being in sync with that objective?
Sure, and I'd be happy to do that. So our understanding, and it's been in the media as well, is that the timeline for PSE being operational has been pushed out significantly because of their desire to obtain a permit from Puget Sound Clean Air. And there's been discussion about how long that might take. And our latest understanding is we wouldn't expect the facility, PSE, to be operational until late 2020, if not early 2021. So that does give us time to be able to look at other alternatives for the site and begin a construction process. In the event, however, that there's something unforeseen, you know, the fire department is prepared to work toward a temporary site and a temporary station, and we've talked to the building officials about what that would entail. So I'm very confident that we'd be able to meet having operational presence in the term in the sense of either a permanent fire station or a temporary fire station in the vicinity of the PSE plant.
Thank you. Any further questions of the commission, of the chief? If not, well, thank you very much for your time. Thank you for your interest in making this project go forward. It's a vital part, you know, public safety is a vital part of the whole conversation. And we just appreciate your actions and our working relationship we have you with you, chief. And so thank you.
Thank you, and we appreciate it as well.
Thank you. Okay. Gee, Yvette, you're up again. This is your evening. The World Trade Center Tacoma, a biennial update.
Yvette Mason again, Local Government Affairs. And this is a World Trade Center Tacoma biennial update. It was suggested that usually the World Trade Center comes and does a presentation right around the budget time. But because there have been some changes with management, we thought it'd be a good idea to kind of give you an update of where we are halfway through the year. So again, no action requested. This is just an update. And we have Mike Fowler, who is the Senior Trade Consultant for the World Trade Center Tacoma, and Tom Pearson from the Chamber. And gentlemen, you can sit here, and there's the remote. And then in the audience, we have the Board Chair, Dale King. As a reminder, the Port of Tacoma purchased the franchise license for the World Trade Center in 1979, and we continue to work closely with the staff. The World Trade Center Tacoma's mission is to help grow trade by providing assistance in trade research, providing targeted trade counseling, and by connecting its members with local and global partners. In February of 2017, the Tacoma Pierce County Chamber expressed interest in contracting for the management of the World Trade Center Tacoma. The proposal included a financial assessment, efforts to improve World Trade Center Tacoma finances, hiring new leadership, and providing key World Trade Center Tacoma services. The World Trade Center Tacoma Board authorized the Executive Committee to negotiate and execute a management agreement with the Tacoma Pierce County Chamber, and an extension is being currently worked on through the end of this year. So again, no action is requested. This is for information purposes, and I'll turn it over to these two to tell you more about the World Trade Center.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. Well, good evening. I'm Tom Pearson, the President and CEO of the Tacoma Pierce County Chamber. And we're going to tag team a little bit here, so I'm going to kick it off, and we'll go back and forth a little bit. So we're going to talk about, give you an update in terms of last time we were here, a lot of things were in progress, and now we've got some things that we want to report back to you on. So we'll talk about our new direction, update you. Many of you were at the Global Awards. Just want to give you some feed for some updates on that, and then activities that are happening through our consulting and other items that we're working on. So. Trade, not technology.
That's it.
All right, so there's our overview. So starting with the new direction, as Yvette mentioned, You know, we are future focused on international strategy to serve the Northwest. And, you know, sometimes we talk about, you know, Tacoma Trade Center, but really when you look at trade centers, World Trade Centers, we are the only one in the Northwest. And so our territory goes beyond, it's obviously Pierce County and South Sound, but we declare the Northwest for our entire service area. So this partnership between the World Trade Center of Tacoma and Tacoma Pierce County Chamber continues to focus its vision and mission on the World Trade Center companies and their link in terms of how they act and succeed globally. As Yvette mentioned, the license is held here, the World Trade Center Association. And just as a context, there's 300 World Trade Centers worldwide in 100 different countries throughout the world. So with that, one of the pieces that I want to talk about in terms of some of the new direction that we've been working on, we've been working on trade focus, obviously, for service. Michael will pick up on that a little bit. It's one of the things that we talked about quite a bit in terms of the direction we actually contract with members to do specific items, contract with them for fees. Collaboration and efficiencies. We really made our office more efficient to make sure that Michael and his team were focused on the specific trade pieces. And that's where the partnership with the chamber, we're a membership organization, so we feed off of each other in terms of events they do and back and forth, whether it's advertisement, but it's also the overhead expense in terms of the back office work. We do that at the chamber. That allows Michael and his team to forward on trade. One of the things that we are working on coming this summer, this late summer, is really looking at that strategic plan. Now that we've been a year into this program, now we need to look forward and bring the community together. And so I will invite a few of you, maybe all of you, to be participants if you're willing and able to do that. We're going to bring the city, Pierce County, Port, and as well as obviously businesses in a room, talk about where do we want to go in the coming years as the World Trade Center for us as a region on the import and export side. And so I think that's going to be really exciting and bring a former commissioner in as well, and as she, you know, our visionary in this, to make sure that her voice is heard. The Global Awards, many of you were participants in this. And this was really symbolic of the change, right? So we used to have Globe Dinner, and we made this into more of a networking, educational, and more interactive with folks. And so as you see in the picture, if you weren't there, we didn't provide you a chair, so you had to keep moving. And and it was packed, lots of folks.
Bring in my own next time.
30 years we've been in operation, and that's one of the things we celebrated. We gave an award, as it was our Trade Visionary Award, and that went to Connie Bacon. And it was an honor to have her and her family there. We also awarded to the Lawler Guitar as somebody who does a lot of trade in our region. So it was a full event, lots of folks, but it really started to kick off, and Michael's going to talk about some of those activities that we've kicked off there as visionary and now as implementation.
Back to the Global War. I'm Michael Fowler, the Senior Trade Consultant. Good afternoon, Commissioner. Tom didn't mention the Global Award, I think, was the most fun Global Award we've ever
had. Is that a great location that started it off, right?
Absolutely. Nice location. These are our services. Starting with consulting, I'd like to go over these. Consulting, educational events, cross-border e-commerce, which is a new one, and trade missions. All of these services involve fee-for-service revenue generation. Let's talk about consulting first. There are basically two categories of clients that I see as most promising. One is local firms, and the other is overseas firms. We're well into the local firms' business. Primarily, these firms are doing well in this market, and they want to expand internationally. And rather than hire somebody to do their international business, they come to us. And to date, the problems have been language and communications, cultural awareness. Sometimes they need some research done in foreign language. In addition, there's also the nuts and bolts of trade, how it works. The other promising sector, I believe, is overseas firms. We have now, I have a proposal out to an overseas firm that has new technology that doesn't exist in this market, and they want to bring it here. Tacoma is a perfect place to set up operations with the logistics, the warehousing. We have a great place to open up U.S. operations, but also it's quite a challenge for a foreigner to come to this market and make connections and get responses, and to make those initial contacts is very difficult. We have a lot better chance calling from the World Trade Center Tacoma to a local contact and making it happen than does a foreign company coming to our shores trying to set up business. So we have some proposals out now, and we plan to get into this overseas firms market. Local firms, we are also have an example to talk about. We have had a few contracts already, but the contract that most recently I just got back from overseas with a client who needed troubleshooting with their vendors. So we helped with the communications, the cultural awareness. We actually went on site and assisted. It's the second contract for that client. I believe they're quite satisfied and look forward to working with them.
It's a Tacoma-based company that has, you know, has some work done overseas, and so just making that connection means a world of difference. And this group that's come here once, and I think the proof is we signed a second contract.
Very good.
I just had a question as you're going through these items like consulting and education and trade missions, I'm just curious if you can just give us a sense of when you're looking at revenue, what percentage of the trade of the World Trade Center in Tacoma will get from each of these areas is your budget?
We have our budget does not have, it is not front-loaded for consulting, but consulting has been a major source of revenue. We now have membership as income as well. The other source of income, we do trade missions, and we also do the cross-border e-commerce. My sense is that consulting right now is the most profitable on the revenue side, next to membership consulting. And then the next will be cross-border e-commerce. I believe that has very good potential, although that is just now starting. Does that answer your question?
No, but.
it's okay. I mean, if membership is just is 10%, I mean, okay. This is about 10%.
Okay.
And it's what Michael is saying is that we didn't budget for it this year, and it's been something that's growing. I mean, we've had, I think, 4 or 5 contracts, and that's going, and those 4 or 5 have already matched what our membership dollars.
These contracts are in the several thousand dollar range.
Very good.
Since we last met, these are some of the activities we have had. We've been pretty busy, you might say, on this. You'll notice that, well, since the Globe was almost like a reboot in a way. We drew attention back to us again. Since the Globe, we have filled our venues. And that also is because we brought in our partners, Trade Development Alliance, World Trade Center, Seattle, China Relations Council, the Building Products Association. We've been working together. I believe that we're all in the same space, and we need to pull together. And pulling together, doing co-promotional work has been very helpful for us. In fact, this morning I was at the World Trade Center Seattle, I was also at the Trade Development Alliance meeting international visitors. So I'm so happy to get calls from our partners up.
So can I ask you another question?
Yeah, sure.
Can I interrupt with that? Just as you see the changes that will be occurring in the Trade Development Alliance as it becomes part of the regional economic trade association, how do you think that'll affect your working with them?
We are working actively together now. I would hope that we will continue to work actively together as well. Right now, I'm on the phone consistently with, we're doing an October 4th event here in this room on supply chain management. I think that we will continue to work together. I don't see how that would change. I'm hoping that it will not.
Okay.
Looking back at the events, they're all revenue generating, and I think that they were both the presenters and the audience. I put this slide up here because we all know how fast Amazon is growing in this country and how we're online sales are going so rapidly in this country. But having said that, China is even faster. China is almost half the world's e-commerce market right now. More promising is that cross-border trade is growing at 50% per year over the last few years. There's been changes in the government that have allowed for faster clearance at customs. There's a growing middle class that wants better product. They want authentic product from overseas. And there are platforms like Alibaba, Alibaba.com and JD.com. These are huge, and they're already established, and so we can take advantage of them. And so last May, we went to Alibaba, and we now have a partner. I mentioned this plan last time we were here, and this partner deals exclusively with foreign firms to bring them on the Alibaba.com platform, which is the business-to-business platform. Last time we talked about a plan, now we have a website under construction. Before I came here, I had a telephone call with one of our members in this project. And the next time I come here, I would hope that we have a working website with half a dozen local companies selling products. And this is quite I believe it's a very good value proposition. It is an experiment. There's no World Trade Center that I'm aware of that's doing this. This is the first time we're using the World Trade Center brand, which has recognition in China. There's over 40 of them there. They know it. We're using a professional designer. We're using also this firm of professional designers are former Alibaba executives who know their search engine optimization techniques. And we're providing guidance to small and medium-sized enterprises. And it's about the cost of a latte a day. $1,495 a year. And so you can get your feet wet in the Chinese market with us at a very low risk.
Yeah.
click on one of these boxes. This is my design. It's not a professional design. They're working on it. They're making it better. You click on one of these boxes and you can put up to 100 products there.
Oh, wow.
We recommend half a dozen to a dozen. It's low cost, and it's a great entryway. We don't know if all of these are going to be successful, but I have a feeling we're going to incubate some very successful firms.
So, it goes back to the market. They want American goods. So how do you get them? This is Alibaba's Alibaba is in compared to Amazon. I mean, we all know and love Amazon. It makes Amazon look pretty small compared to what Alibaba, all the pieces they're in. There's Alibaba, there's Pay, and there's all, it's all encompassing. We did a whole day tour there last year. So it's, you get this B2B into there, it's going to hopeful.
Good. Fantastic.
For our pianists to do this. Good way, as Michael said, to test the market for this price point, entry point.
Commissioner Petridge?
Just a quick question. I mean, I know there are at least one company that I know of. It's a local Tacoma Fife company that's already has just recently signed up with Alibaba. I assume that there are others. I don't know that, but
and they're on
Ames Chocolate is already signed up with them. Are they part of this, or have they just jumped that step?
I'm talking to him right now because he's on the business to consumer Tmall site, but he's not on the business to business site. I'm talking.
Okay.
I just think that this would be just a plus for any business that wants to try to get into a market like that. It just
without the headaches of
what
you sometimes get involved.
Risk is low. The financial risk is low.
Yep. Yeah. It's a low entry point, and so a good way to see if your product is best to the market.
Very good.
Yeah, very nice.
This last slide is just one of my favorite pictures. And last time we came here, we were talking about a plan, and now I feel we're underway. Are there any further questions?
Yeah, who's your photographer?
I was going to say, I've never seen this, but this is awesome.
It is, that mountain.
Absolutely awesome. Yeah. Well, I guess maybe I have a couple of comments and then a question. First of all, Tom and Michael, I just appreciate your leadership, your involvement in taking on and continuing moving forward the World Trade Center concept in our community. And obviously, with that goes a thank you to Mr. King and all the board members who contribute on a voluntary basis. The question, though, that I have, and Tom, maybe I'm more directed to you, is financially, how are you doing? And I appreciate the fact that I have a sense, but I'd like for you to confirm it, is that you're continuing to work off of realistic numbers with that expectation. I'm hoping that things are working in a favorable way as we move forward. So could you speak just a little bit to that issue?
Absolutely. First of all, we've got checks and balances in place. We've got an outside contractor who does the books. That way it's in QuickBooks. It's very easily accessible and transparent, which is always my goal in any organization that I run, whether it's our board, it's funders, if they got we're ahead of the plan. So our plan, we didn't have a very ambitious plan, but we're ahead of the plan. And so anytime that you're ahead of plan, I think it's a good day.
Usually good.
and it's just doing what we're trying to do is do the things that we're doing today correctly. Right? And making this, the Alibaba is a year in making. So it's taken some time, but we're doing it knowing that when we roll this out, we're already in the black on this. So anything extra, you know, we want this has to be a benefit to members, obviously benefit to the organization. And so I feel really positive. I mean, we're thin, but we're making progress, and we've got some ideas on how to, you know, make some additional headway in terms of the finances. But we're positive right now.
That's good. And I can't say enough, Tom, for your leadership and the chamber's involvement in this overall, because, you know, I know it's a struggle on the business model perspective, but we very much appreciate it. The other thing is I want you to know, I want to volunteer all of our commissioners sitting up here. And that is that if you need to do any taste testing on those Bite Me cookies or wines before you put it on the website, I will volunteer the commissioners to also be available for that.
I'll put you on the volunteer list.
Sorry, if you're interested in the AgeFlex body match.
I've been testing that to see how that works.
Very good. And thank you so much. Any other questions by the commission? If not.
I appreciate you very much. I mean, this fits in line with, I mean, I should start with this, the vision of the chambers to make the South Sound the best place to do business in Washington State. And to me, a strong World Trade Center Tacoma that into our business. So I appreciate you guys' support.
It's nice seeing the progress.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Michael. And thank you, Dale, for being here this evening. Okay, next item we have is the Vet again on the Foss Waterway Parks Initiative.
Thank you, Commissioners. Thank you, Commissioners. For our next briefing, this is on the Foss Waterway Parks Initiative. We have Norm Golub, Executive Director of the Foss Waterway Development Authority, and Linda Briggs here to make the presentation. As you're aware, Foss Waterway Development Authority is the agency charged by the City of Tacoma to manage and develop the lands along the 1.5-mile Thea Foss Waterway shoreline. They've been in existence since 1996, and they are the primary steward of the downtown waterfront and guides its growth. The agency has been involved with many and a wide variety of projects on the Foss Waterway and the development of a couple of parks. That's what Norm is here to talk about today. I prepared a rather lengthy memo for a briefing, and I won't just read from that. Norm actually has the beautiful presentation and the background to share that.
Great.
So I'm just going to turn it over to Norm, and we also have Linda in the audience also to answer any questions.
Welcome, Norm, and welcome, Linda Kay.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Eva, I just want to make sure I'm pressing the right button here. And is there a pointer on here? Okay.
Okay.
Oh, there it
there
is.
There you go.
Thank you.
That would go forward.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioners, for providing this time for me to give you an update on our capital campaign for the Parks on the Foss Initiative. As Yvette indicated, the Foss Waterway Development Authority, along with Metro Parks Tacoma, has been partnering to bring this initiative forward to create two new parks along the Thea Foss Waterway. The first park site is located halfway between the 15th Street and 11th Street Bridge on a vacant piece of land that the Foss Waterway Development Authority owns. It currently sits directly across from the Wheeler Osgood and the port's 18 acres. Park will look directly out onto the port property. The second park is at the head of the waterway, just adjacent to the 509 Bridge Waterway Park. This is a 4-acre parcel. The other park's a 3/4-acre parcel. This is adjacent to Dock Street and E Street at the head of the waterway. The first park to be constructed is Melanie Jan LaPlante Russell Park, or as it will commonly be called and fondly called, Melanie's Park. This is a large Northwest themed play area park. Right now there's only one children's play park along Tacoma shoreline, and that's a small one at Point Ruston. This will be the second park with a lot more amenities, such as a pedestrian bridge next to a tower reminiscent of the former steam plant that used to occupy the site, viewing platforms. There will be a boardwalk extending from Dock Street to the shoreline and another viewing platform so people can look out on the Puyallup River or the former mouth of it. It will be heavily landscaped with evergreen and deciduous trees and plants. Right now there's
nothing there.
Site. Vacant. Abundant seating and tables with inlaid game boards for those of us that are of an older age and like to just relax a bit. The yellow area, the orangey area here is a 12-foot play mound, and as you can see in this rendering, it's actually quite high up, so it provides a lot of activity for kids to climb up and down, to use their imagination, to be inventive. Park will have a 400 square foot community room with washrooms. This may have a concession area in it. We don't know yet. We're in that early stage of defining the program for the park. This viewing platform You can climb up to higher platforms and take a slide down, but there will be a nice observation deck in here for the public to look out on. And then all of this is ADA compliant. Waterway Park is being designed for human-powered watercraft. Both facilities, I mean, at this park for boat storage and the boat house will accommodate approximately 200 rowing craft of various types, the outrigger canoes, dragon boats, stand-up paddle boards, and kayaks. There is an existing, There is an existing human-powered launch here that will be launched for human-powered craft here. That will be widened and expanded upon as part of this project. Be a new sidewalk or a ramp leading down from Dock Street from this little bump out that is already there. And this will be an off-leash dog park over here so that residents in the Dome District and along Dock Street and elsewhere can take advantage of that. There are environmental benefits to foster natural shoreline habitat along the shoreline. There's a new large green space area here for public events, picnicking, frisbee, whatever you would like to play. There's also parking on site, and we're exploring options for parking off site right now. So we have these two parks, Waterway Park and Melanie's Park, that we're developing. We got to these stages by beginning in early 2017 by hiring Linda K. Briggs with the Briggs Group to work with me in developing a case statement for both parks. We developed that over the spring. And then in the summer of 2017, Linda K. conducted a feasibility study. I want to thank Commissioner Meyer and Petridge for participating in that study. We talked to 74 public and private sector stakeholders, all that have an affinity for the water, for the Foss Waterway in particular. 99% of those that we talked to indicated a willingness to contribute to this initiative. What surprised us was, and we didn't ask this question in the feasibility study, is almost all of them indicated that there needs to be public agency involvement in this before private sector donors will contribute. And so as a result of that, we've been reaching out to public agencies. Pierce County has allocated funding for this park. Metro Parks Tacoma has allocated funding for this park. We've made a request to the city of Tacoma, and we will be making a request to you for participation in funding what was likely to be approximately $11.6 million for both parks. Breakdown on how that works. Metro Parks Tacoma originally contributed $1 million in bond funds. A few months back, we asked them if they would contribute an additional $500,000. They agreed to that. That they will do that through grants. And if they don't get the first grant they'll go apply for, then they'll make it up in other grants until they bring that total to $1.5 million altogether. We have asked the city of Tacoma to match Metro's request, or Metro's participation, and this request is over the next two biennium. So $775,000 in this next biennium, and then $775,000 in the following biennium. Pierce County has already contributed $50,000 from their Parks and Trails Fund to this initiative. They normally don't participate in parks within the city limits, but they saw the value of being a participant and a player in this, and so that was their contribution. Then we will be asking the Port of Tacoma to contribute $500,000 to this initiative as well, utilizing public shoreline access funds. And I can talk to you further about how that might work. In 2021, the city and Metro will go before the state legislature representatives requesting $2 million for Waterway Park and specifically. The public agency requests then total $5.5 $1 million. Private donor requests over $6 million. How we get to the 11.566. In addition to these fundings, the Foss Waterway Development Authority has invested $3.3 million in this project. That was for the purchase of Melanie's Park in 2012 and Waterway Park in 2005. We utilize Pierce County, County Conservation Futures Funds for the Waterway Park purchase as well as additional funds. We've established a $500,000 Parks Maintenance Endowment with the Greater Tacoma Community Foundation. And they are only charging a 1% fee for donor tax deductible gifts for us. In addition, in 2026, $60,000 a year in revenues for marina operations will be applied to park maintenance. This is for not only Waterway Park and Melanie's Park, but George H. Weyerhaeuser Jr. Park.
Is that just for 1 year?
That's after 2026. Each
Every
year, $60,000.
Okay. It's an annual contribution.
It's an annual contribution. And in the parks maintenance estimates for all three parks, Melanie's, Waterway, and George's, we estimate that this should be sufficient. We may need supplemented of about $20,000 to $30,000 for the first 3 years before the endowment fund catches up. Then the Foss Waterway Development Authority also provided $60,000 toward design. We're currently working on an interlocal agreement with Metro Parks and the city, determining who's going to own it, who's going to operate it, what all that is going to look like. The Waterway Park, we're completing a feasibility, a parks operation plan with a consultant, and the draft of that plan has recently been completed for review by staff. The planning cost, and this is the corrected slide, the one you have in your packet, has the total project cost. The zeros are missing off of the bottom of Melanie's Park. But this is how it breaks down: planning and design, site development, landscape and esplanade, building construction, sales tax contingencies, fundraising costs, and participation in the city's municipal arts program, their 1% program. We're currently in the about to start the construction document phase of Melanie's Park. We've completed the schematic design on Waterway Park and are holding our funding there until we get additional funds for that. This is an opportunity where if the port wanted to focus its funding on Waterway Park, carry those funds forward and continue the process of what needs to be done to get the construction drawings through its stages. Melanie's Park is going to be built in 2020. We finished the design. The permitting is going to be taking place now through October 2019. It'll go out to bid in January and be constructed beginning in the end of the first quarter and completed in November of 2020. Waterway Park, as I indicated, the operations plan is being completed, and that should be in August, we think. Then there's the design development and construction documents. Park construction is slated for 5 years from now in 2022. That, in a nutshell, is a brief, quick overview of what we have going on with these two parks along the Foss, and I'm happy to entertain any questions that you have.
Thank you, Norm. Certainly appreciate your presentation. Any questions by fellow commissioners?
I just have a quick question. There's the cost for Waterway Park seems so much higher.
Yes.
Why?
The foundation has to be raised 3 feet above flood for climate change, we are told.
But not for the park on the other
Melanie's with park. With Melanie's Park, that's about a $200,000+ worth of dirt that we'll be bringing to raise the level. But there's the buildings. There's no buildings on it now, so we have no foundations to raise. We have a commitment on the dirt already from a donor.
Okay.
provide us that dirt that we need for Melanie's park.
Very good.
John, I just have one question, because I may not be, I'm not sure if this is the right question. Are there federal grants, I'm assuming, that you could go after or not?
Yes, we're going after many different types of grants. A letter today from a family foundation, for example, they have asked us to submit a proposal for $150,000.
Of course, you will.
So, I mean, that's great. We've met with private donors, and including institutions, bank, real estate developers, many of the stakeholders that were identified in the study. And so we know that we, with the public commitments of about half of the cost of these two parks, will be good to start approaching these private donors. But it's a big ask. I mean, it's a lot of money, no doubt about it. But when you look at the industry, one, there is a need for children's play along Tacoma shoreline. There's only one park. Two, with Waterway, there are no facilities like that except in Seattle, where there are just two public facilities. All the rowing and kayaking and stand-up paddleboards are currently privately operated, except for two in Seattle. So this will provide a regional destination for Waterway Park. As you know, at 5:30 today, about 100 teams have just taken off from the Museum of Glass to row and paddle to Port Townsend in the first, what they think will be annual, 70 miles in 48 hours.
Long way.
Stand-up paddleboard and kayaking have just boomed exponentially. I know that in 2007, for example, there were about 1 million stand-up paddleboards. 2016, that went to 3.2 million. So that's grown 220% nationwide. Dragon boats is the fastest growing human-powered watercraft sport in the world. We have many, many dragon boat enthusiasts here in Tacoma. And so we are seeing a lot of expansion of that industry. So the recreational aspects of both parks, play for imagination, creativity for youth and exercise, Waterway for getting out into the environment in a way that you cannot normally, most people normally don't get to experience. And in that regards, when Metro was talking to us about how we're going to be operating these, they said, you know, we need to provide some programs. We need to provide programs for underserved populations. So I think we're going to see those types of programs developed for Waterway Park. Children's Museum is very enthusiastic about Melanie's Park, and they're planning to use that park heavily. So they're parks that will serve the community. Very enthused and excited, and we've had a lot of good support behind us to kind of lift our sails and set us on the right tack to reach our distant shoreline.
Very good. Any other questions by commissioners? I do have a comment and then maybe a question. My comment is that I want to say thank you, Norm and Linda Kay, because I know you had a big part of it when you did your overall kind of feasibility study. One of the things I noticed in your presentation is the fact that you put maintenance money in, because one of the frustrations that I've always had is you oftentimes public entities build it and then who's going to maintain it? And particularly when you look at, you know, this is really a public benefit that we're talking about here. And the worst thing that I think can happen is you build it, but you don't maintain it. And oftentimes people overlook that in the feasibility period because it's tough enough to raise capital money, much less talking about the longer term impact. So my compliments to you of thinking through that strategy. I think that's very important, particularly if you're asking entities like the port to invest in something, I'd like to make certain it's maintained in the future. The question I would have, though, is the thing that we always struggle with, I think, is that while we get a lot of requests, how would our contribution really enhance or connect to our business strategies relative to investing in this? Could you just, from your perspective, what you know about our economic development engine, what role does it play in a bigger picture here?
Well, at the 10,000 foot level, employers are looking for amenities within the city that add to the quality of life. Parks are a big component of that, of course. The legacy of Melanie's Park, for example, is a way to honor her and provide that environment that many people have identified as needed. With the port, there's a goodwill component to this. This isn't a profit center for you to make an investment, but what it is, it's an opportunity to utilize what your RCWs allow you to do, and that's to contribute to parks. It's an opportunity to take advantage of the public shoreline access fees that you normally pay in and instead build a credits for that program to utilize to pay for this. I don't have an easy answer to that question, Tom.
But it's a question that we have to answer. And,
oh, I understand.
And I think that there are ways to answer that. I guess the only other concluding comment I would have is I really like activities. Human-powered activities is really an interesting part of it.
Claire's got this dragon boat.
I'm just saying, what you're presenting here is really the ability to look at both of these projects and figure out what you really want to invest in and how you want to invest in, if at all. So thank you, Norm. If there aren't any other questions, I really appreciate it. And Linda Kay, we always appreciate seeing you and your capability of bringing, I think, reality to your feasibility study. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Norm, I just have to excuse myself for my momentary lack of attention because I was looking at the texted photographs that were sent to me of my daughter's fiancé participating in the 7048 races.
They didn't even notice.
Yes, well, they're pretty good.
Okay. Thank you very much. Next item we have is on our action agenda. One of the items that originally went out has been pulled, so the only thing we have on our action agenda is Commission International Travel. Nick, would you like to maybe explain this a little bit?
Happy to. Good evening, Commissioners. I'm Nick Damaris, Director of Public Affairs for the Port of Tacoma and Northwest Seaport Alliance. Here, bringing forward an opportunity for Commission International Travel in August. And so back in April, the port staff received a letter, and I believe it's in your packets, addressed to John Wolf, inviting the port to participate in what they're calling a Tacoma to Puyallup Connection Masterclass. This is an effort that's been put together by a broad coalition of individuals, and you can see the confirmed attendees in the memo in your packet, really to explore through some comparative work done over in Europe, the opportunity for pedestrian and bicycle access and connection between downtown Puyallup and downtown Tacoma. Originally, this potential trip conflicted with both our managing member meeting in August as well as potential travel in Eastern Washington. We are going to engage you on both of those things have moved, and so this is no longer a conflict with those opportunities, so we wanted to bring it forth for your consideration.
Okay, thank you, Nick, very much. I appreciate it. One other comment just for my fellow commissioners is many years ago, I had the benefit of of being sponsored to go visit on this kind of type of trip. And I would suggest to you, it's very beneficial. In fact, I remember Dakota was a part of that group that went years ago. And not only will it be educational, I can assure you, even though you're talking about trails linking between Tacoma and Puyallup, I think our interest would be is participating in any decision-making as to where the trail goes, number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, when I look at who's attending this, I can only say that I think it's very, very important that the port participate as a part of that team. I would hope that we could support this. So I would like to entertain a motion for commission authorization for international travel.
So moved.
It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion or comment? Yes, Commissioner.
I have a hard time supporting this. It sounds more like a vacation to me. I know we're going to meet partners.
You go and you'll be bicycling.
I've been there.
Vacation.
And I don't see why we have to go halfway around the world to see how to put a bicycle path between Tacoma and Puyallup, because the land is going to be different from what we're going to see over there. It takes an engineering company to figure out how to get it in there. I don't truly understand the value of what I'm going to see that's going to impact my, it's going to be a sidewalk, it's going to be a pathway. What can I do there that pitchers won't do the same thing?
In my understanding.
Because I mean, it's got to be engineered, it's got to be developed. So what's my trip to Sweden going to do for me to do that?
Well, it's also my understanding that this is not only the trip. There was a kickoff meeting. I did connect with Christina Walker as well. It unfortunately conflicted with your work session last Wednesday. But there was a kickoff meeting of the cohort to get a better sense of what the objectives were for the trip. There will be several other meetings. The trip itself, two follow-up meetings to disseminate that information as well as come up with some conclusions, followed by a public forum that will be hosted by the cohort to be able to engage with the community on the key learnings and how that would apply here.
Okay.
So just from my perspective, to get more benefit out of this, we've just been listening to two presentations on parks on the waterway, and certainly Denmark and Sweden have done a lot as far as developing waterfront parks. If that could be included in some way or added in some way to some of that, that it might be also beneficial for those in Tacoma and Puyallup would be participating.
My suspicion is that could be added or someone could have input in terms of that agenda item itself. And I'd be surprised. One of the things when I went on the trip and Dakota was there also is the adaptive reuse. I mean, it was phenomenal as well as, and I don't know if this is part of the agenda at that time, it was the bioswales and a variety of other things that they've done for the treatment of stormwater. It was amazing to me, some of the stuff that they were doing. Of course, that's quite a few years ago.
Sea-rise stuff is a big issue.
So, I'm assuming we have a commissioner that's interested in going.
I don't know.
Yes, there is. Yes. Commissioner McCarthy.
No.
Yeah. Any other conversation? Any other questions? Otherwise, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries.
They do know how to bicycle on ice, though. When I was there, it was always ice, and they didn't have those little nails sticking out of their tires. And I was amazed how they didn't go crash and boom, because we were doing that.
Very good. Thank you, Nick. We are now on general business. Mr. Wolf, any announcements, events, or recognition we need to talk about?
I don't have any announcements today.
Thank you very much. Okay. Any commissioner comment?
Just one quick one. Went to the transportation luncheon. John gave a presentation of the port. Rod Kuhn gave a pre-presentation of John about the 100-year anniversary, gave a great presentation. And one of the things that was nice about it, they had to have extra tables there because it was really quite well attended.
That's good. Very good.
That's great. I just wanted to ask about one thing and point out another. So this past week, both Commissioner McCarthy and I were able to attend the summit on passenger ferries in Puget Sound area. And I think it was an extremely good meeting with folks from all over the region, far north and far south included, and a real commitment, I think, on the part of everybody who was there to look at transportation on the water as one area that we need to be looking at much more carefully as we are facing so much congestion on the roads. So I'm pleased that the port has decided to participate in the ferry study that is being done down here. And I think that there are a lot of folks really interested in moving ahead on this. So I hope we can be part of it. And then there's one other thing I'd like to mention. Several weeks ago, folks from the Port of Tacoma and Seattle actually attended that Green Ports Conference in Baltimore. And so one of the things that was brought up at that time was visitors who were there from West Africa. They have inquired about the possibility of sending an intern to Tacoma. So I just would like to bring that up as a possibility and check with you, John, if that would work out and see if there's any opinions or thoughts about that.
We can take a look at it. It'd be great if you haven't already done so. Provide a point of contact for me, then we'll follow up.
And Jason Jordan, I think, has that contact.
Oh, he does.
As well.
Okay, great.
And there were people very, very interested, particularly in the environmental work that we're doing here and how that might be transferred to Africa.
Very good. Commissioner Johnson.
Oh, I'll pass.
Yeah, thank you very much. I don't have anything further. We are adjourned at 6:35.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.